Morning, everybody. Welcome to the Winds of Change here at CFUV Radio 101.9 FM. We're heard around the world on the internet at cfuv.uvic.ca. And my name's Janine Bancroft, and I'm on unceded Coast Salish territory here at the University of Victoria. I want to thank Linda for filling in this morning, and we're just hoping that it's that Rod has run away to a Hawaiian commune rather than that anything terrible has happened to him. So if you were listening earlier and there was some unusual sounds coming from the radio, it was our computer took over when nobody showed up this morning. So we're all back to normal, whatever normal is now. I've got a really busy show this morning, and hopefully it's all going to work out. I've got actually four guests lined up. There's just so much going on right now. First, we're going to talk to Zoe Blunt about the upcoming Unite to Stop the Pipelines workshop weekend. All kinds of activities. We've got her on the line, and then we'll speak with Melissa Fong in Vancouver. She's launched a 25K lunch meme contest. If people haven't heard, there was a $25,000 lunch hosted by segments of the Vancouver City Council at the same time as they presented sort of this gentrification plan for the downtown east side. So Melissa decided to have some fun with that. So we'll talk to her. And then Diane McNally is a school board elected school board representative, and she's concerned about what's the potential closure of Sundance School. So I want to talk to her about that. And then in the final segment, Joseph Boutelier is riding a unicycle across Canada, if you can believe it, to try to unite us to change the climate. So hopefully going to get a hold of all these people. And with any luck, Zoe is on the line. Are you there, Zoe?
Yeah. Hi, Janine.
Yay. Hi. So you're busy. How long have you been planning this weekend?
Well, we started talking about this, I think, back in November after the Take Back Our Coast rally. It was out on Dallas Road last fall, and so there's a big demand for people to take this struggle against the pipelines and the tar sands and the tankers, take it to the next level, because we've been speaking out. We've been doing this sort of thing for a long time, and it really is time to ramp up the pressure on the elected officials.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. It's a scary time for the planet and all of us, for sure. And you know, people say that, oh, rallies, what good does it do? But this is the kind of thing that comes out of getting together with like-minded people, right? So you've got a full weekend. Maybe for people who aren't familiar with the camp up north, you could explain what this is and why we're supporting it.
Right. Two of the presenters are the camp leaders for Unist'ot'en Camp, and a lot of people are aware that this is the blockade of the pipeline route up north. In northern BC, near Smithers, there's a group of grassroots Wet'suwet'en First Nation people from the Unist'ot'en clan are reoccupying their territory. They have built pit houses and bunk houses, and a permaculture garden, all of this right in the path of the pipelines. And because of the terrain, the area between Prince George and Kitimat, all the pipelines sort of get funneled through this one valley, and they go right over Unist'ot'en territory. There's supposed to be three major projects. And if they build it, then they would be creating this right-of-way that's like 3 kilometers wide. So it's enormously devastating. Even if there is no oil spills, even if there is no explosions on their land, it's going to be devastating. And, of course, Unist'ot'en people say they have not been consulted. They do not consent. And so they are reasserting, their indigenous title to the land. They are taking on the responsibility to protect the land from destruction. And so we've been supporting this. I'm with a nonprofit group called Forest Action Network, wildcoast.ca, and we've been supporting the camp for the last 2.5 years, and it's been really incredible. We've brought hundreds of people up to the camp to participate, to help build the blockade, and so on. And so their visit here to Victoria, Frida and Togastai, Frida Hewson being the spokesperson for the camp, and Togastai being the hereditary chief of the Lik'tiamasu clan of the Wet'suwet'en, they're going to be here in Victoria to discuss what it's like and how to get involved and why these kind of direct actions may be what actually wins this campaign, actually stops the pipelines.
Absolutely. I don't see what else is going to do it. Now, you mentioned that there's three projects, because, you know, we hear a lot about the Enbridge project. I mean,
yes.
the ads are everywhere. It's really horrifying.
I know.
People who've sold out and are playing the ads. What are the other two projects?
The other two projects are Pacific Trail Pipeline, which is going from the fracking fields of northeastern B.C. up to over to Kitimat as well. So it's from hydraulic fracturing, which is, you know, forcing water underground to drive the gas out. It's very, very destructive, actually causes earthquakes and contamination of well water with gas, natural gas. So there's Pacific Trail, and that one's already approved. You know, they are, and they're way behind schedule because of people blocking the way, I think. The third project is called Coastal Gas, and I believe that is another fracking project. And the reason all these pipelines are going to Kitimat is so that it can be loaded onto tankers, you know, oil and natural gas, or bitumen, I should say, and then sent down the coast and over to China. So none of this resource exploitation is going to benefit Canadians or people in British Columbia. We're going to suffer all of the ill effects, you know, all of the health effects, all of the environmental destruction, the loss of our water, in order to feed China. And this is problematic on so many levels. You know, it's just outrageous. And so it's very exciting. People are taking direct action, and this is, we're going to learn how and why and what gives people the courage to keep going, even in the face of what looks like insurmountable odds. And I'm going to give a little spoiler here. The odds are not insurmountable. It is not impossible to win these kind of battles, and we have done so in British Columbia. We have a proud history of defending the land and winning, you know, in Clackwood Sound and all across the province, you know, for hundreds of years, really. You know, people have always fought to defend the land, and they always will, and we will win.
Fish Lake comes to mind, Prosperity Lake Project.
Yes.
Yeah, excuse me. And I've got Amy Goodman. Throat scratch. I was gonna say, yeah, well, you know, you say that it's not gonna do anything for British Columbians, but Zoe, there's all these jobs. Now I would like to think that the forest defenders are the ones creating the jobs, and wouldn't it be great if we could get recognized for that? But, you know, how do you counter that argument? Because that's what all the advertising's about, is all these jobs. And, you know, they're going into communities that are suffering poverty and because of the logging industries basically finished. And, you know, what do you say to people who say, well, I need the job?
Two words, foreign workers. Mm. They're cheaper than Canadians.
Right.
What we're seeing is that the promises of jobs are not verifiable. They're not believable that the jobs are going to be temporary. And there's no amount of pay that can replace what's being taken from us. So the job numbers are vastly over-exaggerated. And what we see in communities, you know, around the world where this kind of massive resource extraction is taking place, they are impoverished by it. They are not enriched by it. They are impoverished. We're giving it away, and even the royalties and so on. So we're going to have 3 days. This weekend and Monday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we're going to be talking about all this at UVic on Saturday and Sunday, and that starts at 9 a.m. and goes until 9 p.m. Both days we're going to be talking about a whole range of different aspects of how to stop pipelines and how to build community. So that's at the Bob Wright Center on Saturday and Sunday, and then on Monday is when the Unist'ot'en defenders are actually going to be speaking at Norway House on Hillside. And this is all this information is on our website at wildcoast.ca. Just click on the tab. It says spring training.
And this isn't just a bunch of people sitting around talking about how to do this. I mean, you've got this very organized with workshops and people traveling here to present at the workshops, it looks like. And you've got food and childcare, and it must cost a fortune to get into this thing, Zoe.
It is by donation, actually. This is you know, we're investing in capacity building, I guess would be the bureaucratic speak. We've been doing, Wild Coast has been doing action training since 1999, And I'm really pleased to say we have trained, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people in how to do civil disobedience, for example, how to do media releases, how to climb trees and occupy trees and do blockades and so on. And so this is another opportunity for people to get some of those skills, to meet with people who are actually doing this work, to connect with groups and to volunteer and get involved in that way, or to go start their own groups. Because a lot of people do that. And, yeah, it's by donation. It's a sliding scale. It's give what you can. Come as you are. We do have funding, and I want to thank VIPERG and Unifor and the Anti-Violence Project and Occupy Vancouver for supporting this initiative.
Awesome. Okay, thank you so much, Zoe. So wildcoast.ca is where people can get more information. I hope to see you over the weekend.
Yeah, come to the Bob Wright Hall on Saturday and Sunday. We'll be there.
All right. Thanks, Zoe.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye.
Right, Zoe Blunt, she's been a forest defender for many years and has made a career out of it, and bless her for doing that and bringing all these important people together. Wildcoast.ca. Okay, I'm going to try to get a hold now of Melissa in Vancouver, and while I do that, you can listen to a song. Linda helped me select music for today. This is Man Made Lake, and they are performing at an event called Artists for Social and Ecological Justice, which is also happening this weekend. It's on tomorrow night at the Lucky Bar. And there's 5 bands, and it's a fundraiser and awareness night, and it's $12. So, you know, it's Activist Weekend in Victoria, it seems like. This is a song called... It is called Water. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. You're listening to The Winds of Change at CFUV Radio 101.9 FM. Okay, on the line, excuse me, I have Melissa Fong, and she is a PhD researcher, gentrification critic, harm reduction advocate, blogger, and I've heard her speaking on Media Mornings recently this week, which airs on Co-op Radio, about what's going on in the downtown east side, and she's launched this really fun project called, what's it called, The Most Entertaining Mayoral Mockery in Memory. Is that what, did I get that right? Oh! So, going into emergency backup mode, quickly changing the CD, I'm going to put another band that's playing this weekend, or tomorrow night, sorry, at Lucky Bar. This is a band called Bonehoof, and they are also playing at the Lucky Bar for this Artist for Social Ecological Justice. I'll try to get a hold of Melissa again. We can listen to a bit more of that later. So, Melissa, are you there?
Yes, I am. Oh. Could you speak up a bit? Sorry.
There, okay. How's that? That bit better?
A little better, yeah.
Okay. So, Melissa, you are a very creative person, it seems, and you've launched this really fun project, the Most Entertaining Mayoral Mockery and Memery. What's this all about?
Well, it's really a response to the Downtown Eastside Local Area Plan. It's a response to specifically a condo marketing person, Bob Rennie in Vancouver, probably one of the most powerful voices in Vancouver for private land development interests, hosted a fundraising dinner for our mayor, Gregor Robertson, for $25,000 a seat for a lunch. And people found this to be a little outrageous. So when it came to citizens speaking up against the Downtown Eastside Local Area Plan and council planners and developers saying things that were very disempowering, like, we don't have the money to build what you want us to build in terms of social housing, the response was, yes, you do, if you can pay for $25,000 a seat for lunch. So it turned into this kind of joke that was happening over Twitter about just, you know, putting in little digs every now and then at Mayor Robertson for you know, accepting this lunch and the ridiculousness of a 25K seat at a lunch. And it just turned into meme competition. People started creating memes, and I created the hashtag 25K lunch, and now it's being used as sort of to link up the idea that we're not disempowered when it comes to money. We're disempowered when it comes to political will.
Oh, you know? Isn't that the truth, hey? So, yeah, and some of them are really funny. What's the link if folks want to go check it out?
If you just want to go to melissafong.ca, and then you'll see all the links to the news stories. You can there are links to the hashtag that you will send you directly to Twitter, to all the images, and all the information is there on my website at melissafong.ca.
melissafong.ca. Okay, and so who went to this lunch, Melissa? I mean, this is all happening at the same time as, you know, we're watching all these accusations against the Portland Housing Authority and this new local area plan. I mean, it's all happening right now in the downtown east side. Who went to this thing? Do you know?
Names were not disclosed. One would assume that a condo marketer developer is, you know, getting his developer friends or people with that type of money to be able to go to this lunch. Generally, people with money are in real estate in Vancouver. So that's our best guess. There's one meme that I created. Actually, that's the only meme I created personally, was a demonstration of what we don't know who went to the lunch, but we know that it was about 50 people, just under 50 people maybe.
Wow.
And if you multiply 25K times 50 and you divide that by a year's rent of welfare rate, it could house almost 280 people on a welfare rate for social housing for a year. And so I just wanted to link that up, that it's, you know, we don't know who, but, I mean, think about where this money could be going.
Oh, yeah. It's like you say, it's all about political will, and this whole worshipping of greed thing that goes on in our capitalist society is really frustrating. And so why, you know, you're getting a lot of media about your meme contest, and the Huffington Post and various other places have picked it up, which is great. Is Gregor Robertson, you know, holding his hat in his hand now, or is he, you know, how's he responding to this?
He hasn't, even though, I mean, he has been tagged in a few posts, and during the local area plan meetings where residents got to speak to council, if anybody brought it up, there would be no follow-up questions for that person. It's something of, I think, a point of avoidance, and they don't want to address it because, I mean, it's a fundraiser. This is another point, that it's a fundraiser being held in the middle of the year. It's not during campaign season, which means this is kind of money that does not need to be disclosed either.
Wow.
So this is a real point for, you know, charging forward with trying to make electoral reform, like financial electoral reform happen, that we need to be disclosing these amounts, you know. One of the more popular memes is one of, it shows a picture of Adrienne Carr, and Adrienne Carr ran her entire campaign on $25,000, and, you know, Gregor is having lunch for $25,000.
Right. Yeah. Adrienne Carr, of course, is elected as a councillor, former Green Party leader. Yeah. Wow. And so, you know, the downtown east side, for folks who don't know, it's the poorest postal code in Canada, in the city with the most wealthy people. And it's a community. I mean, people don't get that, I think. They think it's some drug den or something, but it's actually a really vibrant, wonderful community that's just being totally ignored and displaced, it seems like.
Right. One of the things that the local area plan does not truly address is the experiences that the downtown east side residents have. And, you know, person after person came to pour their heart out to council and tell them, you know, the downtown east side is being painted as this terrible ghetto. And it's not that. We live there. We know that there are problems, but there's a community down there that other communities are envious of. You know, we know our neighbors. We take care of each other. And that's something that can be harnessed, but I think is not understood as an asset when we do asset mapping as planners. And it's something that the Downtown Eastside Local Area Plan doesn't quite connect to. It looks at sort of hard numbers of what developers say they can afford to create.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't address, you know, the needs of more people that are existing down there.
And where are they to go? I mean, and, you know, then they end up in Abbotsford, and we've seen the mess that that's created over there, and, you
right.
know.
Right, we have stories about homelessness in the suburbs now. I
right.
mean, those stories didn't even really exist, you know, 10, 20 years ago.
Right.
And now those stories are everywhere in the news, you know?
Well, you know, he ran on a campaign to end homelessness, but he's more about ending the homeless, it seems like. Just send them off to the showers and the camps. I mean, really, it's really bad. So, Melissa, anyways, thank you. We're kind of out of time, but thank you so much for taking the time. And again, the website's melissafong.ca. What does the winner of your prize, of your contest, get?
Well, it's a fairly mediocre lunch with me.
Oh, that's impossible.
They get a $25 lunch, but, I mean, the goal is I'm going to invite a bunch of people that have been sort of active in covering this story and people who have been tweeting me and messaging me on social media and saying how much they're enjoying this. And I just want to invite everyone because I think that people don't meet each other in person enough.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to do relationship building on the left. You know, we have all these flurries of tweets and to actually sit down with someone is so productive. Social media is productive too, but it, you know, we need some relationship building, and that's what I look forward to, and that's what I'm hoping to do.
That's great. Social media is a good starting point to get to know people, though, for sure, and then to take it to the next level. And thank you for giving us something fun to do amidst all the horrible stuff that we have to deal with every day. Thanks so much, Melissa.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Melissa Fong from Vancouver, from the Downtown East Side, melissafong.ca. Do check out some of the memes. They're really quite funny. Or you could, if you're a Huffington Post person, she got some other media as well. There's some pretty good ones. Okay, we're going to listen a little bit more now to this song from Bonehoof, who must be from rural somewhere, I'm guessing. They're playing tomorrow night at the Artists for Social and Ecological Justice event at the Lucky Bar. And then I'll try to get a hold of, who's up next? Diane McNally, School District 61. Why are they wanting to shut Sundance School? Sundance School had a great reputation. We'll try to find out more about that. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Winds of Change at CFEV Radio 101.9 FM. Yeah, really, thanks to everyone who donated to this show and all the other shows. I mean, it's every year I've been here over 10 years now, and every year we make our goal. And, you know, so we do this every week or other week in my case, and we never really know what kind of impact we're having. But every year people will step forward and support us, even through, you know, the economic hard times. We've always made our goals. So big, huge thank you to everybody and all the sponsors who donated gifts and all that sort of thing. And if you haven't been to the Room of Swag yet, if you've donated but haven't been into the room, this Friday is the last day. So be sure to get here before 4 o'clock. I think 9 to 4 is sort of the hours. And I also want to mention that the Women's Collective also made their goal. They have a separate day of fundraising. So the Women's Collective will survive another year. Hooray. Yeah, thanks for all of that. Okay, now, if only we had some such good news from School District 61, but apparently there's a structural deficit, Diane, that's causing the need to maybe close Sundance School or privatize it or whatever. What exactly is this structural deficit that we need to be concerned about?
Well, hi, Janine.
Hi.
Would you like me to speak to that now?
If you'd like, or do you want to give a background, or where do you want to start with this?
This is Diane McNally, school trustee for School District 61, and my comments here are going to reflect my thoughts on this, not the thoughts of the board as a whole, because that can only be expressed through a majority vote. My understanding of a structural deficit is deficit spending. I have to bring it to something personal, which is I've balanced my personal budget, but I still have a giant credit card debt that has to be dealt with at some point. It's different from a budget, a balanced current budget. So there are slides from last night's public budget presentation on the school district website. If you go into the main page and look on the left-hand sidebar, there's a category called financial, and it'll be in there called the 2014-15 public budget presentation. So you'll see slide 5 there, and it just expresses a graph that shows an increasing gap between what we get from the province for funding and what we're spending to maintain services to students in School District 61. So that's a structural deficit that we're dealing with. Every year, for quite a long time now, the school district has managed by making internal cuts and closing schools over the last several years. Many schools have been closed. For example, Burnside, Uplands is now an international student program, but various schools have been closed in order to save money. And there comes a time when there's nothing left to cut. And this year, the school is on the block to save about $316,000 is Sundance School. It's a very small program. It was started back in the mid-70s as an alternative program and was housed where the Vancouver Island School of Art is now. It was moved to the site of Bank Street Art Program now. It was a K-7 school back then. And then when schools were restructured in SD61, to be K-5 elementary and middle schools and then high schools, Sundance kind of sucked down into a very small school that now can serve 100 students max. Right now they have about 48 students. It's a small school, and it's very focused on conflict resolution and arts. It's a lovely little school, and parents have spoken to trustees on more than one occasion in consultations held at the school about how much they value this school and how the parents who have chosen to go to that school really value the individuality of the programming there, and that their children would not do well in a school, for example, like Willows, which is an awesome school, but it has about 580 kids. It's like a little kid city, and some students just find that overwhelming.
Yeah, you'd think that would be, something you'd want to hang on to is a small school with alternative programming.
What I'm looking for personally, Janine, as a trustee, is not a school of choice at elementary school levels. I can't get behind people driving across town to find a better school for their children.
Right.
I'm a big fan of small, local, neighborhood schools, and I really believe we can do this kind of excellent programming if we maintain a small neighborhood school model without the government forcing us to consolidate services for economies of scale. So what I'm going to say at tonight's vote, and what was said last night at the public budget meeting too, was what about making this school a small neighborhood school? Would that make it more viable? And the parents I've spoken to are not against that. They are not particularly coming for a program of choice. They're coming because it's a small school, and their children need that small community. Catchment areas would have to be withdrawn, and in order to make this school a neighborhood school, but you know that's doable.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you were in charge of the purse strings, you know, how would you solve this? How would you solve this? Where would you find the money to do?
Well, Jane, I have some thoughts about where to find the money, and I expressed one of them last night. I've asked for the district to cost out all expenses for putting Wi-Fi into 28 elementary schools. That's coming down right now on a school-by-school basis. And I've spoken against Wi-Fi in K-5 schools as my platform when I ran in the 2011 elections. I truly think that students at this level of schooling need interpersonal relating and instruction from a teacher. Not so much bring your own device or iPads. So back in 2010, Arbutus Middle School Wi-Fi'd for a cost of $10,000 out of the school budget, and that's parents who raised that money. This is an extra. And a matching grant from the school district. And there was some rush to do this or miss the matching grant. There were $20,000 to Wi-Fi middle school. We have 28 elementary schools, which are not as big as Arbutus. But even if you look at, 28 elementary schools Wi-Fi'd at a cost of $10,000 per each, that's still $280,000. And that's a good way toward the $316,000 that's going to be saved by closing Sundance. The district did pull off about a $50,000 so-called surplus, although the $9 million deficit is still lurking in the background for this year. That $50,000 could be applied to that amount, and that would save Sundance. I also have other thoughts of various savings, but as they involve some personnel, I can't do that here. I brought it up in an in-camera meeting and was told to express it differently in a public meeting, so I'm trying to find my way around how to do that.
So what's the event tonight, and how can people get involved and help save the school?
The event tonight is going to be a decision. It's a decision and a vote-taking meeting. We've had several public consultations around closing the program, and we've had eloquent presentations from the students themselves, from their parents. We've had stellar alumni like Nick Blasco, who's bringing us all Rifflandia. The owner of Mole Cafe is an alumnus. They've just spoken to what Sundance gave to them in terms of being able to really develop their own potential and realize their own dreams in life. And so you can still get on the speakers list. You need to phone the school district, and I never know that number off the top of my head, so I'll just find the website. If people want to call in to get on the speakers list, it's 475-4159. You're limited to 5 minutes, and we do expect to hear from speakers tonight.
Okay, 475-4159. Mm-hmm. And one thing that occurs to me is the fact, I believe this is true, that actually private schools in our school districts are funded from the public purse, are they not?
They are. They are funded up to 50% per student off the tuition.
St. Michael's, places like that?
Mm-hmm. They all are. It's from about 30 to 50%, and many people have spoken out against that idea, but every political party, every mainstream political party is behind that, and I find that seriously disappointing. Mm-hmm. People do make arguments that if all those students were to flood back into the public schools, public schools would be overcrowded. I don't believe that. That's why we've been closing schools because of declining enrollment. So if this government were to fund public education properly, we would not have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we can't talk about schools. We've only got a couple of minutes left, but we can't talk about schools, public schools, especially without mentioning John Young.
Mm-hmm.
He was such a champion, wasn't he? And he's passed recently, so mm-hmm. Do you want to say any words about John?
Absolutely. John Young was my hero of public education when I was a young ed student at UVic. He had his alternative school at Camel River, and he was just my ideal of how to do a public school and give as much autonomy to students as you could. And he always championed no-fee public education that was available to everyone. John continues to be an inspiration.
I'm sure the spirit of John will be at the meeting tonight. Okay, thank you so much, Diane.
Thanks for the opportunity, Janine.
All right, good luck tonight.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
That was Diane McNally, School District 61. We elected her, and she's one of the good ones for sure. So next up, I'm going to play a song from the Celtic Dreamland. Now, this is a CD I picked up in the Room of Swag after donating to the CFUV radio station. It was in the free box. There's actually a free box. And for all the kids who've been to Sundance School, it's a fantastic place. They used to have a little garden. garden as well. I don't know if they still do that. The kids would help plant every year and harvest. This is from the Putumayo Kids CD, Celtic Dreamland, Mary Jane Lamond. I won't try to pronounce the Welsh name of the song, but you are listening to CFUV Radio 101.9 FM, and these are the Winds of Change. And I'm going to next attempt to get a hold of Joseph Boutelier, who wants to ride a unicycle across Canada, if you can believe that. Stay tuned. Again, if you've donated to the fund drive, thank you so much. We've made our goal. We're going to get new equipment, upgrade the newsroom this next year. And you got till Friday at 4 to get your gift from, or your whatever you want from the Room of Swag. So next up, Joseph Boutelier is going to ride a unicycle across Canada because he's concerned about climate change. Joseph is on the line, and I have to say, Joseph, you've done a fantastic job of outreach. Like, your website is really beautiful, and the video that you put together is fantastic.
Oh, thanks so much. I've had a lot of help.
Yeah, is that right? You got some good help, that's for sure. And you're in Sydney today trying to rally support?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I just took the opportunity to unicycle here, do some training at the same time as meeting with Gary Holman, the NDP's environment critic and local MLA here, and some other media folks. So yeah, it should be a good day.
Should be, yeah. You rode along the Goose, I guess.
Yeah, Lochside Trail. So.
Isn't that fantastic? I love that ride.
I wish the rest of the ride across Canada could be as quiet and beautiful. But it's a great place to train.
No kidding. Well, I've heard that they're building something like it across Canada. I don't know what's going on with
it's
that.
It's coming together, yeah, piece by piece.
And, well, Sydney's a good place because, you know, they elected the first Green MP in Canada. They made history. And,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's your message, really, right, is you're concerned about the climate. We should all be riding unicycles. Is what you're saying.
Or bicycles, or walking, or buzzing, but yeah, it's good to see options arising, and stuff like the Lochside Trail makes it so much easier to be green, for sure.
It does, and you're a veggie guy, which is also a big, huge part of it, and I checked your website, or your Facebook, you were concerned about getting good, healthy food across the way. I know it's a bit tough in some places, but hopefully people, are you bringing a vehicle with supplies, or how's that working?
Well, I call it a self-supported journey. Of course, no trip that's, I guess, this big or ambitious is truly self-supported. As I said, you know, I have lots of help from volunteers, and I'll have folks riding bicycles along part of the route. A lot of local businesses in different communities have been kind enough to provide room and board and billeting from lots of individuals as well. But there'll be no vehicle beside me, so it'll mostly be me with stuff on my back and strapped to my uni and... Yeah, see what I can make do with what I have, really, when it comes to food.
So what, can you strap panniers to a unicycle?
Not really, but hopefully something similar. My uncle's a machinist, so he's helping to rig up some kind of aluminum cases, essentially, that will be bolted to either side of the seat post. That's the idea. We'll see how that works out.
Right. Yeah, you'll have to train with that. Then you're kind of new to the whole unicycle thing as well, right?
Relatively new, yeah. I first picked it up probably 5 or 6 years ago, but just barely learned it, and then just got back into it really over the Christmas break. So, yeah, it's been a bit of a whirlwind, but it's just a great, it's a good, fun way to travel, and it's sort of, you know, gives an excuse for a couple more headlines, but it's also just really approachable. You know, it's a quirky, interesting method of transportation that piques people's interest and gives me a chance to start chatting with them and hopefully build a rapport before talking about some of the kind of heavier issues around climate change and the environment that we're facing right now.
As the planes roar overhead.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, that's Sydney for you. Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about that. Like, why are you so concerned about the environment? How did you get launched into this?
I can't precisely say. I've always been concerned about the environment, and I guess growing up here, you know, we see the dramatic ends of the spectrum, both incredible, pristine, untouched environment, but also really scary threats to everything from forests through clear cutting to major oil and gas pipelines and extraction developments, of course, liquid natural gases. The next boom, they say, is going to be here in BC, so it's sort of a pinnacle of a lot of the battles that I think Canadians are facing in general seem to be here in BC. And then, you know, honestly, when it comes to climate change, I don't even see it as an environmental issue anymore because it's so overreaching and has such profound impacts already and increasingly will have impacts on our society and our economy as well as our environment. So I think we need to start kind of framing it in that mindset.
Mm. So your website is unityfortheclimate.ca, and I believe you're speaking or you're attending the workshop this weekend, the Unite to Stop the Pipelines workshop?
Yeah, that should be a great event. I hope to attend as much as I can. It's also kind of a moving weekend for me. It's a bit of a busy weekend, but I hope to be there for most of it, and I will be presenting at the Bob Wright Lecture Hall at 6 p.m. on Saturday the 29th.
On Saturday.
Yeah, about my journey and just sort of how it relates as well to our struggles here at home around especially the Northern Gateway.
Yeah, well, you're right. There's this push to industrialize the North, and I come from an industrial town in Alberta, and I can tell you it's not pretty. And, you know, I just shudder to think that that's what's going to happen here. So thank you for what you're doing. Now, when do you leave?
In a couple weekends. So April 5th is the launch. I'll be cycling from Mile Zero at 6:30 a.m. make sure that I get to Sydney for an 11 a.m. launch event, which will be sort of the big send-off at the Beacon Park Pavilion here by the water.
And then, I mean, there's snow in Canada, you know. Do they have, like, a winter tire?
I don't, yeah. Oh. I'm told there is snow, you know. What's this white stuff people keep talking about?
Yeah.
No, there's a good chance through the Rockies that the weather might hold me up for a few days. And if, you know, I'm hoping it doesn't, but, you know, I've given myself enough time. I expect this whole journey will take about 5.5 months. So, yeah, if it's really bad weather up there, I'll just have to wait it out, unfortunately.
Well, that could be advantageous, and you get a chance to chat with people. So you've sort of got events lined up, like getting lined up across the country as you go?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely want to have an impact in the communities where I cycle through. It's not just sort of, you know, an endurance ride. It's really a chance to talk to people about the issues and get their feedback and opinions, and also really encourage people to reach out to their MPs and prospective MPs before the 2015 election as well, and get commitments for all political parties really to work across party lines to react to the climate crisis.
Well, and I really hope, you know, Joseph, I've been vegan for 14 years, and every day I'm more and more convinced that that this is something that we can all do. You know, it's a huge, moving to a plant-based diet is just such a huge way to personally take on the climate crisis. It really is. So I hope you're able to chat that up as well. Are you going to be carrying a petition or trying to meet with the Prime Minister when you get to Ottawa? What's the plan?
You know, that would be awesome. I don't hold up a lot of hopes for meeting with Mr. Harper himself, but I definitely want to meet with individual MPs along the route. Once I get to Ottawa, it'll be about a week before Climate Fest happens, and I've been working with the Climate Fest folks and the Citizens Climate Lobby, who already have petitions and different sort of things that they're advocating for. So I want to really build on the momentum that already exists there rather than kind of starting something new, but definitely want to try and sweep the momentum that we have for environmental issues here on the West Coast, bring it east into Ottawa at the climax of the beginning of the fall session of Parliament, and keep that going before the 2015 election again, which I think will be an important milestone for this issue in Canada.
Mm. Yeah, I think so for sure. Okay, unityfortheclimate.ca is your website, and you're going to be speaking on Saturday night at the Unite to Stop the Pipelines event at the Bob Wright Building. And anything else you want to let us know before you go do your thing in Sydney there?
I mean, that's most of it, definitely. I'd encourage folks to check out the website and see a list of more upcoming events. It'd be great to see everyone out here in Sydney on April 5th. Yeah, anyone who wants to ride from Mile Zero, if I can convince anyone to get up at 6:30 a.m. as well, it should be a good fun fun ride, and a great event. There'll be live music and poetry and not just speeches. So, yeah, it should be a good fun day.
Right on. Yeah, it's a great ride, really. I would invite people to do it. Okay, well, you know what? Good luck. You're going to be tweeting and all that sort of thing as you go, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's a blog on the website as well.
And then are you coming home after?
We'll see eventually for sure.
All right. You can, but, great thing about a unicycle. You can pick it up and put it on the bus, I guess.
Yeah, or the train.
We'll
see.
Right.
When
yeah.
the time is right.
Okay.
We'll ride out the momentum as long as it lasts.
Right on. Okay. Well, have a safe journey, Joseph.
Thanks so much, Jenny.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Joseph Boutelier, Unify, Unity, what have I written down in my scratch here? Unify, he said, right? Unify for the climate.ca. Okay, that's it for the Winds of Change this week. It's been a busy day, and want to thank everybody for coming on the show. Zoe Blunt with the Unite Stop the Pipelines workshop this weekend. Again, there's all kinds of civil disobedience workshops, some music, grassroots organizing. There are Indigenous people. There are Indigenous musicians. There are people coming from the Unist'ot'en camp up north. They can tell you how to, you know, they're on the front lines. I mean, these are the people that we're going to be writing letters to in jail one day, you know, quite possibly. So let's go meet them now so that we know who we're writing to, I guess. Oh, it's a scary future, but you know, these young folks, it's their future and they're taking it on and it's great. So thanks to Zoe and everybody who's organizing that. And Melissa Fong from Vancouver with the 25K lunch meme contest. Definitely check that out at melissafong.ca. Diane McNally, elected officials trying to save our public school system, one school at a time, and then, of course, Joseph Boutelier, who's heading off on his unicycle across Canada. Holy moly. You've been listening to The Winds of Change. I will be podcasting the show at my blog place, JeanneBancroft.wordpress.com, and you're staying tuned, of course, for Democracy Now! And all the great programming that happens here at CFUV. On Tuesday, the Street News turns 10 years old, and we're having a little party at the Solstice Cafe downtown. You're most welcome to join us. Chuck McCandless has been doing street outreach in Duncan for many years, and he's retiring this year. He's going to come down and bring his banjo and play some music. So this is a song from his CD, the McCandless Family Band, and I hope to see you Tuesday or somewhere. Thank you so much for listening, and do take care of each other out there.